Creative Male Aging, a radio and internet project in which we explore and challenge many of the conventions around aging and look particularly at new options for today's older men. I'm Tony Ryan. Welcome to the program.
The more you can do early on to help to promote your cognitive health, the better the outcome's going to be. And so I always like to say, especially to my grandfather, so my grandfather's 86, and I say, you know, the more you're engaged and the more you're out there and reading and playing cards on the computer and doing crossword puzzles, the better your outcome ultimately is going to be.
And yes, the focus of our program today is on maintaining brain health. In December 2014, I caught up with Rex J. Lipman, a remarkable South Australian who, as you will hear, has been actively promoting brain health for quite a number of years. Rex Lipman, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, and it's nice to be with you.
Rex, I don't usually begin interviews by asking someone about their age, but I think in this instance, it's very relevant to what we're going to be talking about. You are, I believe, over 90?
That is correct. I go 93 on Anzac Day.
I know you've had and continue to have a fascinating life, both in your professional career and in your life outside work. What is life like for you at 93?
I think very much the same as always been. Always been lots to do and not much time to do it.
You've written and spoken about the importance of maintaining a healthy brain, and particularly in your book, Don't Miss the Bus. Why that particular title?
Well, because I think if people don't address the problem, it'll be too late and the opportunity will have gone. And that's what I say, go on the bus of learning, keeping up to date, keeping mentally and physically fit. And if you don't do it now, it's harder later. And running after the bus when it's headed off is a lot more difficult than if you get on the bus while it's still available.
What does one do to get a healthy brain at probably any age of life, but certainly in later life?
Like any of the muscles of the body, the muscles of the brain or the cells of the brain have got to be exercised. If we don't take daily exercise, physically, we will lose the use of our limbs. If we don't make our brain actually work, we'll lose the use of our brain. We've just got to keep exercising it at everything. If we make ourselves remember telephone numbers, our brain will do it. If when somebody speaks to us, look, I'm sorry, I forget names, we say, and we write their names. So you are Bill Smith, you are Tony Ryan. And then I look at you and I get my eyes, the sense of vision, identifying you. I get the words mouth, Tony Ryan, and that does it. And collectively, by using as many senses as possible, I try and identify a given image with a person's name.
You also talk about the importance of deep breathing. How does that come into it?
Well, the brain weighs about 2.5 pounds, which is 2.5% of the body's weight. And of the oxygen we breathe in, the brain takes 25% of it. That is to say, it doesn't take a small portion, it takes a quarter of all of the oxygen we are. And if we don't breathe deeply, not enough goes to our brain and our brain goes to sleep.
It seems to me, listening to you, that that's important both for physical health and also for mental health.
Yes, the physical and the mental are related to each other. If you've just got an active brain and you don't use your body at all, that isn't good. We've got to try, even if you're a paraplegic. We've seen people in Olympic Games of disabled people, just when they want to train themselves, it's amazing what the human body will do.
If someone has, for instance, an accident of some kind and has an acquired brain injury, is it possible to restore some or all of the brain health?
Under proper circumstances, it is. There is the classical example of the greatest, the basic thing that made everyone change their mind dates back to 1942 at the Battle of Smolensk. And a Russian officer had a bullet go right through and destroy 90% of his brain. It so happened that a man called Luria was the surgeon who looked after him, and he was in fact a neurosurgeon. He was fascinated with this man who had lost 90% of his brain, and he set to work on him, and he worked on him for 20 years. And he restored 90% of his brain. Now, this blew out the window everyone's concept that once you lose brain matter, you can never replace it. That the neurons don't regrow, they don't redevelop, they don't thrive once they've been destroyed. Now, it was only in the last year of his life, in 1977, that his book of his case notes on this man was translated into English. And as far as I know, the first person who found this, or the family, of a rather incredible woman called Barbara Arrowsmith Young. She had a brain condition that no one could treat, shocking dyslexia, was considered as dumb, stubborn, everything. The family heard about this man Luria, Alexandre Luria, and they got a copy of the English translation and gave it to her. She could only read very slowly, but after she'd studied it for a week, she said, "That man is me." And she started treating herself from the case notes that Luria wrote about the Russian officer. Within 3 weeks, the cloud started to move. Within 3 years, she was considered one of the brilliant neuroscientists of the world, and her book, The Woman Who Restored Her Own Brain, I think I'll get it right, but it's very close to that. And it's a marvellous book, the book of Barbara Arrowsmith Young. I think it's terribly important that now we've got so much new knowledge that's not in textbooks. If you look in most textbooks, still the one-way street of deterioration of the brain, physical destruction of the brain is a one-way downhill run, and that you can't recover from it. But starting off from Norman Doidge's book, The Brain That Changes Itself, which he wrote in 2007, that changed everyone's perception. He gave 10 case notes of people who had had serious brain damage or had had brain deficiency who corrected it themselves. And one of them, of the 10 case notes in it, is that of Barbara Arrowsmith Young.
This project is called Creative Male Aging, and we're looking particularly at men. But people of any age, when they reach retirement, what to you is the secret of that time of life?
Well, the secret is don't retire. A very simple answer. But the more physically fit they keep, and the more they actively use their brain hour to hour, day to day, it will work. But the moment they take their foot off the accelerator, it will slow down. And if it slowdowns too much, as I always say, be careful opening the door, because it could be those nice young men in the clean white coats taking them away to a retirement home.
Rex Lipman, thank you very much for talking to the program.
And it's been a pleasure talking to you too.
Rex Lipman's book, Don't Miss the Bus, is well worth a read. Details will be on our website within a few days, creativemaleaging.com. That's creativemaleaging.com. Rex Lipman's reference to ongoing research into brain health led me to the University of Adelaide, where Dr. Lindsay Collins-Prano is researching cognitive decline in healthy ageing and also in the context of neurodegenerative diseases. I began by asking her about current research into brain health.
I think one of the things that's led to such growing awareness of brain health is our aging population. So by the year 2050, the population of Australia over the age of 85 is expected to quadruple. And of course, when your population is aging and the proportion of your population that's getting older is growing, you have to be really aware of not just how to help people to live longer, but how to help people to live longer more successfully. So what can we be doing early on, and what can we be doing doing as we get older that helps us to maintain our brain health. And I think that's why we hear so much about it today.
We hear more and more these days about the words neuroscience and neuroplasticity. Just before we get into the other detail, could we just clarify what we mean then?
Of course. Well, when you hear someone talk about neuroscience, it's literally talking about the science of the brain. So neuroscientists come from many different backgrounds: biology, psychology, chemistry, physics, even computer science. And what all of these scientists have in common is that they're working together to try and understand the brain mechanisms behind life processes and behavior, emotion, cognition, all of these different factors. And when we hear the term neuroplasticity, we're talking about the ability of the brain to change. So it's not a static organ. Let me give you an example. So people who play a different sort of instrument, for example, you may actually see that the area of the brain that is represented by the fingers, for example, for someone who plays guitar, can get larger than in somebody who doesn't play guitar. Or there's a really clever set of studies by a neuroscientist named Eleanor Maguire, and she's studied taxi cab drivers in London, and she's actually found that when you look at the part of the brain that's important for spatial memory and for being able to move around in your environment, it's larger in taxi cab drivers than in non-taxi cab drivers. So those are some examples of what we mean when we talk about plasticity.
And when we're talking about brain health, I guess for most people, they'd immediately think of things like Alzheimer's and dementia. And some people, I understand, seem to confuse those terms. Could you just again clarify?
So these are two terms that tend to get used interchangeably with one another. But it's important to remember that Alzheimer's disease is a type of dementia. So while many cases of dementia are in fact due to Alzheimer's, there are also many other reasons why people can develop dementia. So, for example, in diseases like Parkinson's disease, we don't tend to think of that really as being a cognitive disease. We tend to think of it as being involved with motor impairment, but there's a large proportion of Parkinson's patients that actually go on to develop a type of dementia that's very different than what we see in Alzheimer's. So dementia is sort of the catch-all category for these different diseases into which Alzheimer's would fit as an example.
So what do we know about what happens to the brain over our lifetime?
So the brain changes quite a bit over our lifetime. One thing we notice that happens is that it can become less plastic. So if you remember the neuroplasticity I referred to before, where you can get those changes in the representation in the different cortical areas, this is something that we see happens less frequently in older adults. So their brains start to become more static. And in addition, you start to see some atrophy of the brain. Now, what that means is that tissue is being lost in particular brain areas. And so we start to see this as people age. And so one of the things that people often ask is, well, how does cognition change in older men versus older women? And do they have cognitive decline at different rates? And so I think there are definitely cognitive differences. So when you look at older women, they tend to do better at tests of verbal ability. So older women are really good at tests where they're asked to do semantic memory or picture naming or recalling words. And men tend to do better at tasks that involve visual spatial memory. So they're really good when you ask them to rotate figures or to find direction and navigate around a space. So there are definite cognitive differences. But one thing that I think we should stress is that the rate of cognitive decline, most studies have suggested, is not different between men and women. That men and women tend to decline cognitively at the same rate, at least between ages 60 and 80. Once adults get over the age of 80, it's a little difficult. The studies have been more mixed. And also the risk for Alzheimer's disease doesn't appear to be different between men and women. There's a higher incident rate in females, but the risk itself is similar between the two sexes.
On the Community Radio Network, you're listening to Creative Male Aging. And today our focus is on brain health. And my guest is Dr. Lindsay Collins-Prano from the Anatomy and Pathology Department of the University of Adelaide. Is cognitive decline inevitable?
Well, that's a tricky question. We certainly know that when we look at studies of older adults, there are areas of cognition that do decline, but there are lots of others that maintain stability over time. So let me tease that apart a little bit more. So we can talk about the difference between fluid intelligence versus crystallized intelligence. Crystallized intelligence is really your knowledge for facts. So your ability to know when Australia Day is, for example, or your ability to know, well, if I was back in the US, I would say who the first president of the United States is. So that tends to maintain pretty stable over time. So older adults will show that their semantic knowledge, their knowledge of facts, is very maintained, versus other things, things that require speed, for example, tend to be more decreased in older adults. So we call this fluid intelligence. And we start to see that begin to decline even as early as the mid-20s. We really see it begin to accelerate even more after age 65. So I would say that certain types of cognitive decline is inevitable, but many other areas are preserved. And there's lots you can do to help slow that rate of cognitive decline, which I'm sure we'll talk about later.
Does this bring us back to that word neuroplasticity?
Absolutely. I think that the more you can do early on to help to promote your cognitive health, the better the outcome's going to be. And so I always like to say, especially to my grandfather, so my grandfather's 86, and I say, you know, the more you're engaged and the more you're out there and reading and playing cards on the computer and doing crossword puzzles, the better your outcome ultimately is going to be.
The other thing that came to mind was this quote we often hear about, you can't teach old dogs new tricks. I wonder about that.
That is absolutely not true. So I think that, you know, one thing that unfortunately can happen in our society, whether it's in the United States or here in Australia, is sometimes you can assume that because someone is an older adult that they're not interested in learning technology or not able to pick up some of the newer things. And I'll tell you, my grandfather really is, he blows me away. So between walking around with his iPod in his ears and having his Kindle, and he actually had to teach me how to get ebooks from the library. So he was far ahead of me on that. So I think that it's all your state of mind. So being optimistic and thinking, well, maybe it's going to take me a little longer to figure this out, but I'm going to go out there and I'm going to try it. And so much of that is what's behind brain health.
Let's pick up on some very practical examples that people, and maybe men in particular, can do to keep their brain healthy.
Sure. Well, it's treating your body to treat your mind. So some of the best things you can do to help to preserve your cognitive health and to promote brain health is to have a good diet. So a diet that's low in saturated fat, that's low in, unfortunately, all those really delicious things that we all like so much, and that's high in things like lean protein, fruits and vegetables, all the things that you always hear all the time and you think, oh boy, do I really have to do that? Well, for brain health, yes, unfortunately you do. Things like social interactions, or like I mentioned before, you know, picking up an e-reader and reading a new book, or doing a crossword puzzle, or playing a card game. There's been a lot of studies that have suggested that older adults who are more engaged in what we call activities of daily living and social activities tend to have higher rates of what's called cognitive reserve, meaning that their brains are better able to cope with pathology, and they're able to maintain their healthy cognitive function for longer periods of time. And I think this is why sometimes you hear that anecdotal evidence of people saying, oh, well, when my partner passed away, then I just didn't go out anymore. I just didn't have social interactions. And then they'll unfortunately often develop cognitive decline. I think educating older adults about the importance of staying active and staying engaged is really beneficial for helping to prevent that.
When men retire, this can be a really challenging time, and this is where I guess we do need that resilience.
Absolutely. So we know that one of the things that actually helps to promote healthy cognition is occupation. But I think that it's important to remember that just because you're not working in the traditional sense, it doesn't mean that you can't be engaged. There are many other opportunities you can take to stay active. So oftentimes, retiring from your occupation will give you the opportunity to pursue volunteering that you may not have previously had the time in order to be able to do. Additionally, from your period of working, you have a lot of skills that are extremely useful and valuable for people who who are just coming into the workforce. So you can take on a role as a mentor, or you can act as a consultant. So I think that there are many ways that you can find to really stay engaged and find your identity and maintain that identity, even independent of a traditional labor force role.
Let's come back to neuroscience. What can we expect from research in this area in the next 5 to 10 years?
Well, I think that one of the things that we need to do is sort of narrow neuroscience. But if I take neuroscience in the aging capacity, I think one of the things we're trying to understand is, now that we're sort of getting a better handle on how does cognition change as we age, and there have been a variety of great longitudinal studies that have followed people over time to see how does cognition change over as we age, what might be related to that, so what role does sex play, male versus female, what role does occupation play and education play. I think since we're really starting to understand that more, now we can use that knowledge to try and understand, well, okay, now that we know this, what's really going on is the molecular basis of that. So what's happening in the brain, and how can we take advantage of that to develop treatments and to develop different programs that older adults might be able to become involved with to help to promote their cognitive health?
From the University of Adelaide, Dr. Lindsay Collins-Prano. In researching for this program, I came across a reference to the Your Brain Matters program. To find out more, I spoke in Adelaide with Rajiv Chand, Head of Services and Innovation with Alzheimer's Australia. What can be done to ensure that, for instance, we have an active brain?
Good question, Tony. So in terms of looking after your brain health, Alzheimer's Australia have developed the Your Brain Matters program. So the Your Brain Matters program has a focus on reducing your risk of getting dementia and focusing on brain health and risk reduction strategies. And they've come up with 5 simple steps that we can all focus on for better brain health.
Could you take us through those 5 steps?
So the first step is, you know, looking after your heart. As we know, things such as, you know, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, diabetes, and being overweight and smoking can all impact not just on your heart, but also your overall health and well-being and your brain health. So it's important to have regular health checks to ensure that high blood pressure is under control, cholesterol's controlled. If you do smoke, to give up smoking or quit smoking. And it's also important, given this segment is about older men, to encourage them to actually go to their doctor to have checkups. Important to go to your doctor, have regular checkups, and follow advice and treatment. The second step is focused around physical activity. So obviously being physically active is very important for your health, but also your brain health. And what the guidelines recommend is, you know, 2.5 hours to 5.5 hours of moderate physical activity. And that's including, you know, a bit of muscle and strength training, such as, you know, lifting, you know, some weights, dependent on your ability, what physically you are able to do.
We don't have to climb Mount Kilimanjaro, but we can still aim to be healthy.
Definitely. And a lot of it is about lifestyle, making those lifestyle changes of, you know, being physically active and healthy. And it could be simple things, you know, such as, you know, going for a walk or joining the gym and exercising, taking up a sport or a new hobby that you might be interested in. And it's important to find something that you're interested in, because then you'll be more motivated to, you know, participate in those activities.
Okay, take us to step number 3. We've done heart and exercise.
Step number 3 is mentally challenging your brain. And this is very important, that we keep our minds quite active. Something that's really quite mentally challenging is learning a new language. You know, what you could also look at is, you know, taking up a new sport or new hobby, because that will, you know, get your brain functioning and challenge your brain. Some people enjoy reading, and that can be mentally challenging and uses your brain. Evidence suggests that people who have higher education are better able to cope once they get dementia. So, you know, if you challenge your brain, are mentally active, what it does, it creates new connections in your brain, so you have more brain reserves. So if you do get dementia, you're better able to cope and for longer. in my own personal case, to keep my mind active, I've taken up, Sudoku and puzzles. And I'm also at the moment learning to write Hindi as well. So, that, is something that's, challenging my brain currently and, keeping my mind quite active.
Okay, step number four.
So step number four is following a healthy diet. And this is also very important for brain health and just general function and everyday health as well. Evidence suggests that we should avoid diets high in saturated fat and transsaturated fats, such as deep fried foods, a lot of takeaway foods, pies, pastries, etc. More the processed type foods. And what the guidelines suggest is what we should be doing is eating more vegetables, fruit, fish, grains, legumes, and more lean meat. So the key message is focus on reducing the amount of saturated fat that you have, and look having more healthier options in your diet. The fifth simple step is enjoying social activity. So being socially active is also good for your health and brain health. That could be, talking to friends, socializing regularly. For older men, this might be, joining a men's shed. So nationally and locally, what you find is, most council areas have a men's shed which men can join. And that can be physically active depending on what the task is. It can be mentally active, challenge your brain depending on what you're doing in a men's shed. And socially, having a chat or a yarn is important. Humans are social beings, and obviously being withdrawn has health impacts as well. So what Alzheimer's Australia and South Australia do is we do a lot of awareness raising activity within communities. So we go to community centres, Rotary clubs, even men sheds, and we talk to individuals around memory and ageing, looking after your brain health, and things you can do to improve your brain function as well.
As I came in this morning, I noticed at the front of your building the words "Fight Alzheimer's."
The idea of Fight Dementia came about when we started our campaign. So we had our rebranding of organisation, and it is about putting the message forward and fighting and advocating for the rights of people with dementia and leading to changes within the system that better supports people with dementia and their families and people that are in contact with people with dementia or impacted by dementia. Alzheimer's Australia has a website, which is fightdementia.org.au, and we have a whole range of resources for people to access on dementia. This includes help sheets, and we have help sheets in different languages that people can access. We have publications, upcoming events that we're running locally as well as nationally, as well as the latest news for people to access on the website.
Rajiv Chand, Head of Services and Innovations with Alzheimer's Australia in South Australia. Also in the program, you heard from the remarkable Rex J. Lipman, at 92, a passionate advocate for maintaining brain health. We also heard from Dr. Lindsay Collins-Prano from the Anatomy and Pathology Department of the University of Adelaide. Further information on the topic of brain health will shortly be online, together with a podcast of this program, creativemaleaging.com. That's creativemaleaging.com. This Creative Male Ageing project was made possible with assistance from the Office for the Ageing, Department of Health and Ageing, the Government of South Australia. The project consultant is South Australian psychotherapist, author and educator, Dr. John Ashfield. From PBAFM in Adelaide, South Australia, I'm Tony Ryan. Till next time, go well.